Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
I actually think at 9:30 a.m. this morning, we had maybe the greatest 5 minutes of radio on YouTube ever. I mean, that's the way I look at it. I mean, you know, now that we're actually on YouTube, we can make it a video show. Not this show is not on YouTube. Not right now. Maybe in the future. It is on our Facebook page on Mondays during the season. But who knows down the road. 9:30 a.m. I jumped in what we call the bullpen, which is the chat on the YouTube stream for Jeremy and Joe, and I jumped in and said, do you guys think that Jeremy and Joe would get mad if I brought my brand new driver in to show it off and be cool? They're like, no, they'd be jealous. I don't think they're that jealous. They're like, yeah, it's cool, but as Jeremy said, it's also left-handed. Why would I be jealous? Very good point, Jeremy. Somebody in the chat said, when I brought it in, I showed it, I'm like, woo, my new driver, I haven't used it yet. Going to the driving range today, and that's why I'm wearing shorts and t-shirt today on a day that's going to rain later. I got to get it out first. Get out there first before that happens. I figured I'm going to go out there today, going to try this. And what I'm debating in my head is, how do I do it? Like, do I warm up with some irons first and just go right at it and say, I'm just putting this darn thing on the tee and going. What do you think, Josh?
I feel like you got to do some
irons. I brought a few irons.
I think you should do, like, do you have like long irons or like?
No, I brought a seven, a pitching wedge, and I did bring a wood.
I'd start with the wood, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm trying to think like what would be comparable to it, but it's not.
Well, usually the way I would normally warm up is, especially early in the season going to the ranges, take a much shorter club, just something to swing a little bit with.
Owen actually has some suggestions for
okay.
you.
Okay. Owen, what do you got? Here.
I just went through a very similar process.
Oh, okay.
I just got a new driver as well. I didn't get fitted for it. A little different.
All right.
But I just picked one up, and I went immediately from the golf store to the paddock dome and hit like 45 drivers straight. I didn't even bring another club into the room.
How did that go for you?
Awesome. I hit like four bad ones to start, and then I figured it out, and it was great.
Oh,
I played
right.
Diamond Hawk on Friday. With
but
Jerry
you didn't like walk
Josh.
Away going, I am so sore from that.
I was definitely sweating by the end of the session.
That I mean, like, sure. That's a lot of, I mean, how many times you hit a driver in a round anyway? 14?
Yeah, not as many times as I hit. I probably hit mine were three rounds of golf. I hit that driver just in that session. It was great, though. I figured it out. I went and played the next day with it. I hit it pretty good.
Okay. All right.
Hit it pretty good is modest. Owen was mashing it off the tee box.
What did you wind up like?
I got a TaylorMade QI10 Max.
Okay.
Last year's TaylorMade driver.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing. When I got mine, they're like, well, we got the new model or last year's. I'm like, well, it's not used, right? No. Why would I pay that much more money for 1 year? I guess people would do that. I didn't want to do it.
I didn't want to do it either. I paid $150 less for what I'm assuming is
just as good, right?
So
I know. For me, the only issue was they're like, well, because you're left-handed and you need this specific type and it's last year's, they had to search. There was one left at the warehouse.
Oh, there you go. Got lucky.
So that's why I had to wait a couple weeks. A couple weeks ago, I got fitted, and that happened. So I came in today. I showed it on the YouTube stream, and we had a good time with it. Yeah, so the possibilities are endless on this YouTube stream. I might have to – a lot of times I do the show here from Studio Capaccio because it doesn't really matter. Like, I might have to pop in a little bit more just to have some fun with the guys, you know, at 9:30 or 9:45.
As you came in, they were sampling my beef jerky.
I heard about that. Yeah. What is up with this? You made your own beef jerky.
Well, so I told you yesterday that I'm going to be off tomorrow because I'm going on a backpacking trip this weekend with my buddies. And I made some beef jerky for the trip. Never made beef jerky before, but I discovered that my air fryer has a dehydrate button. So I tested that out yesterday. Made some black pepper beef jerky from a big 2.5-pound roast. And It was good. I liked it, and I didn't know what everyone else was going to think, so I was like, oh, I'll just sample it.
You have some more here?
I don't, unfortunately. They ate it all. I brought enough.
They liked it that much.
I brought enough, and then they just ate it all.
Bring some next week if you have any.
Yeah. Oh, I have 2.5 pounds.
So. Oh, you do?
Well, I'm 2.5 pounds worth of meat.
I am a beef jerky fan. I like beef jerky.
I like beef jerky a lot, too. It's just so expensive.
So, on that note, real quick, one of the reasons I brought it up was there was somebody in the chat box, Laura, I think. Thank you, Laura, in the bullpen, if you're still listening. Laura said, as a few people, oh, Sal's a lefty just like me. I am right-handed, but I do golf left-handed. I am right-handed. I swing all sticks left-handed. I golf left-handed. I hit a baseball bat left-handed. I shoot hockey left-handed. But I golf right. I mean, but I'm a right-handed person. I write with my right hand. I eat with my right hand. Everything I do is my right hand.
My dad's like that too, except he only plays hockey left-handed. Everything else is right-handed.
Mm-hmm.
Only hockey is left-handed.
Well, I always tell people
and I don't
this.
Know
so,
why.
So there's going to be people telling me now, oh, I'm the same way or I'm opposite and I do this lefty, I do this right. I get it all the time. That's fine. I think it's totally natural to be one dominant hand but swing sticks a different hand. What I think is weird is when people swing different sticks different ways. Well, I golf lefty but shoot hockey righty. It's kind of weird for me to think about that, right?
That's like my dad. My dad plays hockey lefty but plays baseball righty. It's super
I don't know,
weird.
Maybe someone gave him a lefty hockey stick when he was young and just naturally did
that, right? See, hockey, I think, is the one where it's like you have, if you are given a lefty or a righty first, then you might just go that way regardless.
Do you want to hear the, I'm going to look this up right now again to make sure I'm right on this, okay? So do you want to hear, what is really odd though, I always tell people this stat. It's just crazy. This is a cool sports stat to bring to your friends today, okay? Hold on. Okay, here we go. Okay, let me see. Cool. Okay. I just want to make sure that I have this right. In Major League Baseball, this is a cool stat. I think I have to make sure this is exactly right. It is very, very rare for it is not that rare to do what I do, and a lot of you do, which is throw right but bat left. Okay, throw right but bat left. It is extremely rare for a Major League player to throw left and bat right. Totally out, right? Isn't that weird? The throw right, bat left is not rare. Lots of guys do it. Throw left, bat right. I'm going to tell you about it. And here's, okay, throw left. Bat right. I'm going to type this in and throw left. And the reason I think it's a really cool stat, you can go impress your friends with this today. I have read last year, there were only two actual major league position players who did it in the entire Major League Baseball. Now, you have switch hitters, but I'm talking about
throw specifically.
Left, bat right. That's it.
Only two.
Only two, and they were both on the Astros. That's correct.
That's kind of weird that they're both on the same team.
Yeah, so I want to make sure I have that right, and you can go take a look at it. But I will tell you, there have been players over the years, like Ricky Henderson was one of them. If you're a Ricky Henderson fan, you remember Ricky Henderson. Ricky Henderson threw left but batted right. But go check it out. I have to find out who these guys are. I think the Astros had two guys. Here, let me just look this up real quick. Here we go. Houston, here it is. This is from last year, Josh, okay? Houston has the only two position players in the league. Pitchers don't count, okay? Position players in the league who throw left and bat right. Chaz McCormick and Jake Myers. That's it. That is wild to me. So go impress your friends and ask them, hey, how many major leaguers, position players, not pitchers, go impress your friends tonight and say, how many last year regular position players who played, you know, regularly actually threw left and batted right? And you're going to get, like, I don't know, a couple hundred? No, two. Chaz McCormick and Jake Myers both play for the Astros. Not switch hitters, but that's it.
I was trying to do the math real quick to see, like, the percentage, because there's only two. But how many active players are there in the MLB right now in just position players? There's 760 counting pitchers. Or 780. Sorry, I read that wrong. But there's, you know,
well, you have eight players a team. So it's basically eight players a team.
That's an easier way to think about it. I didn't think about it that way.
Yeah, so eight players a team.
With a few substitutions.
With a few substitutions to play regularly.
So let's say 12 players each team.
Mm-hmm.
That's
how many are you talking about? 300? Over 300? 360?
Yeah, just a bit over 300, yeah.
So there you go.
Wow.
That's wild, right?
That is crazy. And then think of how millions of players in the world.
And, now, a lot of people at the younger levels do it. It's just weird to get to that level and be able to do
it. Right.
I think a lot of it's because you are reducing the number of possibilities because baseball is such a right-handed thrower's game because infielders are all right-handed except for the first baseman a lot of times because you're throwing that way. So baseball is such a right-handed thrower's game that you're also kind of narrowing your possibilities to have a lefty thrower, righty batter. So that's probably why. Anyway, pretty interesting, right? So when I came in today with my golf club, people were like, oh, I hit lefty too, or I'm a lefty. I'm right-handed, but I hit all sticks left-handed, which is kind of interesting. And a lot of you do the same thing out there. It doesn't mean it's going to go well. We'll find out today when I hit the range out there. All right, today we have a very loaded show for you in a lot of ways. And we're going to continue on with learning about Bill's draft picks. We're going to learn about Chase Lunt, who was their sixth-round pick, an offensive lineman out of UConn, with Joe Arruda. Joe is a UConn men's basketball and football writer at the Hartford Courant. And we're also going to learn about Caden Prather, Bill's wide receiver they drafted in the seventh round, from Jeff Ehrman. Jeff used to be at the Washington Post and Fox Sports. He's now at Inside Maryland Sports, so he covers the Maryland Terrapins. We're also today going to talk with Jonathan Peterlin. I believe Jonathan was on the station a few days ago and on the morning show, but different time slot. And now we do know that Elijah Moore is a member of the Buffalo Bills, so we can talk with him about the signing of Elijah Moore. He's an afternoon host, by the way. Jonathan is on 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. We'll get his thoughts on Elijah Moore on the Buffalo Bills and also take a look back at the Cleveland Browns draft. 803-0550 is the telephone number. I want to get your thoughts on Elijah Moore joining the Buffalo Bills. Matt Bove and I last night recorded a podcast. We talked a lot about who's in, who's out, possibilities in the wide receiver room, how Moore actually fit and what his role might be, and the current 89-man roster. So I kind of went through this exercise last night, and I want to bring it to you, but lots more stuff at the podcast. It's always Game Day in Buffalo with Matt Bove and me, and you can check that out. I tweeted it out, and it's also at the Sal Sports YouTube channel. So a lot of my thoughts from last night were kind of right off the cuff, and now I'm back here today at 10 o'clock to kind of get into it again with you and see where you're at with this. What do you think? I don't need to get into all the stuff that happened with Brandon Bean on Monday again when rehash all that on WGR. Yes, I know there is a point to be made about the discussion that happened on Monday here on the radio station. And then shortly after, Moore is in for a visit, which was already pre-planned, and then they do sign Moore. Yes, there's a discussion about that. I get it. I just want to get from you what you think about this move and if it helps the way you think about the Bills' wide receiver room, if you still think they need to do more, no pun intended, if you think that this is something that could really pop for the Bills, or if it kind of is not a needle mover for you. Really, that's what I'm asking. 803-0550 is the telephone number if you want to jump on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And of course, you can always tweet me at Sal Sports. We are always getting connected with you, our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. The way I see Elijah Moore right now is as the Bills' fourth or fifth wide receiver. Again, what I try to do here all the time, and I say this to people, when you tell me, you know, you ask me like how I see things, it's not about how I see things. It's how I think the Bills see it, okay? And the way I think the Bills see it is Shakir is clearly their number one. Now, when you say number one, what does that mean? He's not obviously Jamar Chase. He's not Justin Jefferson. Not that type of number one wide receiver. Not even Stephon Diggs. But he's their main guy. Most targets than anybody on the team. He's going to be on the field a lot. He's their main guy. We know that. I say Keon Coleman is number two. The Bills need him to be number two. They want him to be number two. If not, it is a really, really whiff of a draft pick from a year ago. If he can't be really a big part of their offense, whether I say two or three, I mean, because I think Josh Palmer comes into play here. But to me, Keon Coleman is their main outside wide receiver who needs to be that guy this year. That's how the Bills see it. They spent the number 33 overall pick last year in the NFL draft on this kid. He was starting to play really well. He gets hurt. He comes back at the end of the year, and it wasn't the same. We know that from Sean McDermott. We know that from Brandon Bean. And a lot of people, I think, took their comments about Keon Coleman to kind of mean that they're soured on him. They're out on him. Not at all. That's not ever what I thought about it. Not after 1 year. I think they kept telling us, look, he's young. We just need more there. But I think they've always had faith and, you know, that that would happen. And he's going to go into this season, I think, as their main outside guy and, to me, number two wide receiver. Now, if you want to argue that maybe Josh Palmer becomes that, that's fine. I don't think there's going to be much of a differentiation between the top three, to be quite honest with you. I mean, Khalil Shakir's going to be on the field a lot, but I mean, Shakir, Coleman, and Palmer, I could make a legit argument for any one of them that they're going to be the main guy for Josh Allen. Because look what they paid Josh Palmer, $9 million. It's not an extraordinary contract, but it's enough of a contract to say he's playing. He's going to be on the field. We need him. And look at his skill set. What was Josh Palmer when the Bills went out and got him this year as a free agent? He was the guy that could be able to get open, get separation, beat man-to-man defense. That's what they needed. So I think there's kind of a line here. The top three, Shakir, Coleman, Palmer, how you want to align them on the field specifically, how you want to talk about them with number of targets, that's fine. Maybe it washes out a different order, a different way, but I do think that those are the top three. Okay. The next two, I think there's a line here. Bam, there's a space, there's a separation. Then you get to the next two. That includes Curtis Samuel and Elijah Moore. Those are the only two in this tier. So if I do tiers, my tier one is Shakir, Coleman, Palmer. My tier two is Samuel and Moore. Now, if you want to argue and say you think Elijah Moore could be better and beat out Curtis Samuel for the quote-unquote number four wide receiver, no argument from me. I'll give you that. I just don't know if there's a difference anyway between four and five on this team when you're talking about these two guys. Where there could be a difference, and Joe brought it up this morning. We talked about this, and he asked me when I came out with them. Where there could be a difference is the number five guy a guy you have to have and rely on to play special teams? And typically, I would say yes. I think that is what you want. Typically, you want your fifth wide receiver to be a special teams contributor. But it doesn't always have to be that way if it doesn't fit that way, right? You don't want to force it. And in this case, I would say this is where I give Laviska Shenault a chance to be the sixth wide receiver. Maybe even five if Elijah Moore doesn't have what the Bills think he can have and bring to the table. I think that might be a stretch, though. I just don't see, and a lot of you have brought up, oh, this is a guy that's going to replace Curtis Samuel. I just don't see the Bills eating. Well, I guess you could now. I'm looking at it now. No, that's right. This year they wouldn't be able to do it. The Bills are not eating Curtis Samuel's contract right now. They're not doing it. They'd eat $12 million, actually $15 million with no savings. Not happening. Curtis Samuel's on this team. Money matters here when it comes to that much. Want to talk about next year? That's a way different conversation. His contract and moving on from him, you're actually saving quite a bit of money. $6 million, I believe, I'm reading from Over the Cap right now. Spot Track, Over the Cap, either way you want to go, they got this for you. So the way I look at it is, Curtis Samuel's on the team. The question is he four and Elijah Moore is five? Or is he five and Elijah Moore is four? Okay. Both possibilities. You know what else is possible? That Elijah Moore comes into Buffalo, and through OTAs, minicamp, and training camp, he just doesn't pop. He doesn't hit the way that they expect and the way they need, the way they want. Now you have to think about, okay, you could probably move on from him because what's the guaranteed money there? We don't know yet. It's not going to be extraordinary. If you do have to eat like $3.5 million, they've done stuff like that before. Didn't they do that with MVS? I think MVS was eating like $4 million. If I remember right. So you could do it. Then you open the door for a Tyrell Shavers, who could be a guy that can play special teams, can help out, I mean, as in some role there. I'm not giving much space right now to Jalen Virgil or KJ Hamler, although Virgil actually did get signed to the active roster last year. And Hamler is another guy who can contribute on special teams and return punts. But these guys have been in the league. They haven't really carved out a big enough and good enough role to stick. So I'm not going to anticipate right now that that is something that's going to happen right here in Buffalo. I'm not going to give Caden Prather much space right now. We're going to talk about him with our guest a little bit later. He's a seventh-round pick. Perfect guy to release at the end, put him on the practice squad. If somebody takes him via waivers, you live with it. But otherwise, you develop him. I know people have thrown around the name Justin Shorter. I don't think he's necessarily like the comparable to Justin Shorter, but I think that the process of the player and how his career could go and where he starts out and all that could be very similar, which is, hey, seventh-round pick, not going to make the roster right now, not enough room, put him on the practice squad, let's see. And then you have a few guys that are coming in, reportedly, for rookie minicamp as undrafted free agents. So that's how I handicap this. I have one tier of Shakir Coleman-Palmer, another tier of Samuel Moore. And I think then it stops where that's where you're ending and these guys are making the team. The next tier is Shenault and Shavers. Both of them, one of them would have to beat out a guy above them, and or for Shenault, maybe he's in his own tier for this, he actually has to just show he is so good at returning kicks, you have to keep him on the team. And that's fine. If you do that, then you're trimming from another spot around the roster. One of the things that I've read from a lot of you out there, at Sal Sports, by the way, on Twitter, hope you're not only following, but subscribing as well. I appreciate that. Got some stuff for subscribers on there. One of the things that I'm hearing from people is that Shenault is in a battle with Codrington. They're not going to keep them both. I don't think that's true at all. It may work out they don't keep them both, but that would be because of LaVisca Shenault not making it. Like, I can't see right now how Brandon Codrington's not making this team unless someone like Daquan Hardy beats him out. I mean, Elijah Moore did return some punts. KJ Hamler has, right? So you could, guys like that could do it. Theoretically, I just think, you know, Brandon Codrington, this guy was good last year. He was fourth in the NFL in punt return average. He's on a rookie, second-year rookie contract for a seventh-round pick. He's cheap as heck. You keep guys like that. The Bills are going to have two kick returners. They're not going to put one guy back there. The dynamic kick return, moving it up to the 35-yard line, they're going to need two guys. They're going to want two guys. They've talked about this. It's going to be probably Brandon Codrington and either a running back like Ty Johnson, Ray Davis, or Brandon Codrington and LaVisca Shenault, which I think he's going to get every opportunity. So LaVisca Shenault is not competing with Brandon Codrington for a spot. He's not a punt returner. It's not what he does. It's what Brandon Codrington does. So when you talk about it, you got to separate those two. They're not fighting for one spot. Now, they might numbers-wise be fighting for a spot, but not for the same actual spot as far as what their role is. Hope that makes sense. That's how I see this wide receiver thing happening. Now, Matt Bove, my co-host on It's Always Game Day in Buffalo, made a great point to me recently. And I credit him because he's right. And you can think about it like this, too. You could like Tyrell Shavers a lot. And he did some nice things. His first touch in the NFL, he went, 76 yards, 84 yards, whatever it was, for that touchdown against the Jets. He's a guy a lot of us thought would make the team at the end of camp last year, and he didn't. You could like Tyrell Shavers a lot. But I'll use him as an example here of what we're talking about. Sometimes, though, like Matt said in hockey with the Rochester Americans and guys you see, sometimes you have this ceiling that even though you look like you're right there to make the team, you've kind of hit your ceiling and other people are coming in that are just better, that are younger than you, and they have more potential. So they just kind of keep jumping you and jumping you. And that could be what winds up happening with Tyrell Shavers here. Yeah, we really like him. We could keep him. There's somebody else we really like also, and he's a little bit younger. Yeah, we really like him. We could keep him, but could he really stick for 17 games? Right? And then the next year, it's just like you don't get any better. At some point, you stop that development of being a guy that, next year he's going to really hit a lot more. Guys like Jamarcus Ingram, who've kind of had that progression and wound up ultimately, and you know me, I've been talking about Jamarcus Ingram for 3-4 years now. And Jamarcus Ingram last year finally, you know, showed, hey, I'm ready to play and I'm ready to do this. But again, even if I talk about him, look what they did at corner. What does that tell you? It means that there's still an opportunity for others to pass him. Because at some point you say, okay, that's really good for what we need, but has he hit a ceiling? So I'm using this for a Tyrell Shavers. I'm using this for a Jamarcus Ingram. And you have to kind of think about the roster like that with how the Bills build it and how they think about it. The Bills have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 true corners, and I would say 12 with Cam Lewis, who's a nickel but can play safety, obviously. And I'm counting nickel. I'm counting inside and outside corners. They have 12 right now on the roster, if you count Lewis and Jordan Hancock, who are both going to kind of be nickels slash safeties. Slot corners slash safeties. So your thoughts, 803-0550, here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We're going to have Joe Arruda come your way next. Going to talk about Chase Lunt and the UConn offensive lineman. Also, I mean, he's a UConn basketball and football guy, so maybe chat a little about UConn basketball, college basketball as well. Always like to throw in a sneak in a question like that. But let's learn more about some more Bills draft picks today. We're going to learn about Chase Lunt. We're going to learn about Caden Prather. And we're going to learn about Elijah Moore from Jonathan Peterlin of The Fan in Cleveland when he comes aboard an hour from now. Good to be with you here on a Thursday. Sal Capaccio with you on WGR on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. All right, we're going to learn more about some Buffalo Bills draft picks. Chase Lunt, taken by the Bills, sixth round. You know, the Bills had they have another player on their team, an offensive lineman, Ryan Vandermark, who went to UConn, that football factory of UConn, right? It's worked out pretty well. I mean, Ryan Vandermark's a nice backup piece for them, and now they go out and get another big athletic lineman. And here to talk about it here on the Wester Hotline is Joe Arruda, who is a writer, follows and beat the beat writer for the UConn basketball and football team. And he joins us here on the Wester Hotline from the Hartford Courant. Hi, Joe. It's Sal Capaccio here in Buffalo. Good to talk to you today.
How's it going? Thanks for having me.
You got it. I got to ask you first and foremost, I noticed on your phone number you have a Syracuse area code. Did you go to SU?
No, I did not. I grew up in Geneva, New York.
All right. Well, you're familiar then with New York State and Western New York and the passion for the Buffalo Bills, which is why we're asking about a sixth-round offensive lineman.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So tell us a little bit about Chase Lunt and what he brings to the table as a football player.
I mean, you mentioned it. I mean, he's big. He's athletic. You know, I think with these UConn guys, you know, he's shown a lot of, you know, ability to fight through adversity and to stick with something. You know, he's at UConn for 6 years total and, you know, only won three games through the first three. So, you know, this is a guy that's been through the fire and, you know, he's been a beloved locker room guy since, you know, I started covering the team. So, you know, I think that was it was a good pick in the sixth round especially.
Yeah, and he's a kid from Texas, I see, that chose to go all the way to UConn. Quite the journey, but obviously he's a guy that he's seen his share of high-level football, whether it's at Texas or even UConn, which actually has been a program that's had some recent success.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was a two-star recruit, and he came to UConn, and he stuck it out. And, you know, UConn brought in, you know, a really good offensive line coach in Gordy Samus, you know, when they hired Jim Mora, you know, back in 22. And I think, you know, that's really helped them. They've had, you know, two offensive linemen drafted in the last 3 years, you know, and yeah, they've had a lot of talent at that position and Chase is one of them.
All right. So I'm looking at his NFL draft profile. Lance Zierlein does a great job. He actually projected him to go in round 4 or 5 and his NFL comparison was Liam Eichenberg, who actually has played in the NFL and he's been around for a little while. So that's pretty high praise right there. What does Chase Lunt, what did UConn do on offense that we can translate to the NFL and say, this is the kind of offense they ran and maybe what you're looking at with a guy like Chase Lunt and what he's been able to do?
Yeah, well, UConn's offensive scheme is really built, you know, to showcase its run game and its offensive line. They run that outside zone, you know, zone running scheme where, you know, these offensive linemen are able to thrive. And I think a lot of NFL teams, and Coach Sammons was telling me this, you know, they like UConn guys because they've run a lot of the plays that they're going to see at the next level. And they're prepared for what's going to get thrown at them right away. So I think that definitely helped out, you know, looking at him. And I think the reason why he ended up going a little later was, you know, he hurt his, I forget what the exact injury was, but he had a lower body injury during the bowl game. So he wasn't able to fully participate in, like, the Senior Bowl and in the combine and everything like that. So I think that might have hurt him a little bit. But his goal at his pro day was to show teams that he can move around. And that's really been one of his main skill sets.
What is he like off the field? You've covered this young man for a few years now. What is Chase Lyon? What are the Bills getting in Western New York getting in a human being that's going to enter this locker room and live in this community?
Yeah, I mean, he's a really mature guy. He's a little older, but, you know, like I was saying earlier about the locker rooms that he's been in, you know, he stuck it out with UConn, which you don't see. You know, a lot of offensive linemen like to move around, especially, you know, the way his career started. You know, he redshirted that 2019 season. And then they didn't play a season in 2020. And then he comes back, coach is fired 2 weeks into the 21 season. They win one game, and he sticks around and eventually gets a bowl win on his resume. So this is a kid that's mature. You know, all of his teammates love him. I've never heard a bad word about him. And, yeah, he's been through the fire.
Joe Ruta joining us here on the West Her Hotline. If I can for a minute, I know you cover UConn basketball, obviously. What's been the reaction to the season they had after back-to-back national championships?
Yeah, I mean, you can't. UConn fans would love to get a national championship every year. But, you know, last year they missed on a couple transfer portal guys. And I think right now there's a lot of excitement that, you know, they're going to be back, you know, into that contention. They got a lot of big names back, just got, you know, team captain Alex Caravan back, and they've done some pretty good things to fill their needs in the portal. So, you know, and obviously they played Florida as tight as anybody in the tournament. So I think it was kind of an honorable exit, but yeah, I think they'll be back.
And then obviously Danny Hurley, a polarizing guy, a great coach, but we saw a lot of things last year that kind of, I would say, made him polarizing around the country. What is Storr's affinity for Danny Hurley and the way he coaches and what he does with that program?
Yeah, I mean, he's a really, you know, he's built for viral moments. I think a lot of things that he does, you know, can go viral. But I think, you know, having covered him very closely, he's not always like that, even though those are always what goes viral. And, you know, I think he fits sort of the mentality of people around here, and they kind of agree with him. And when he's winning, you know, they love him. So, yeah, I think, you know, he's a really real guy, and he wears his emotions on his sleeve. And I think people here relate to that.
And obviously the women, they get back on top. They win the national championship. Can you describe for people here? Now, we have a really nice women's basketball program here at the University of Buffalo. They actually did win the women's NIT. It was fun. It was cool. But, you know, then they lose their coach because that's what happens here when you have a mid-major program. Not like it is in Storrs. Can you describe for people here what it's like in Storrs, Connecticut, with the women's basketball team?
It's like a factory. You know, Gino, he's been doing it for so long, and he's got it running. You know, it's one of the smoothest operations I think you'll see in the country. They share the same building as the men's program, and you could just, you know, you can feel the energy in that place.
Yeah, and as far as just are these the way that the program is viewed, not like it is a lot of places around the country, even for some men's teams, the way that the women are viewed in UConn, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, they're royalty.
You know, right.
I mean, they're, you know, people here have been loving women's basketball for a long time, and they have deep, deep tradition.
All right, Joe. Well, thank you very much for joining us here today. Tell everybody where they can find you if they have any more questions or they just want to follow. We got actually quite a few people here in Western New York that might be UConn fans as well as on the basketball side. But tell everybody where they can follow you and your work.
Yeah. Well, we'll be out there in Buffalo later this or in the fall. But Joe Ruta 9 on Twitter's my social media, and then Hartford Current, current.com. Spelled C-O-U-R-A-N-T. So you can find me there and check out some stuff.
Why are you going to be in Buffalo in the fall?
UConn football is playing.
That's right. Playing that's yeah. right. Okay, that's right. You know what? I just had Pete Lembo, the UB Bulls coach, on the air, and I totally yep. forgot about that. You're right about that. What does UConn look at? Let's give a little preview here. Then, what is UConn football looking at once we get to the fall and they come to Buffalo to take on the Bulls?
Yeah, I think they're going to be pretty decent again. I mean, their offensive line, they lost three guys. You know, Chase. Their right tackle, and then left tackle, Val Sen, was, you know, signed a contract with the Cardinals. And then they had a guard that went in the CFL draft. So they're rebuilding on that offensive line, but it's been kind of a pipeline lately. So we'll see what they have, you know, coming up through the ranks. But yeah, I think they kept a lot of good offensive players. The question will be on defense, where they got a lot of new guys. But they've been doing pretty well in the transfer portal, so...
Yeah, that's a
seems be exciting
to be,
year.
Seems to be the buzz two words these days, the transfer portal, right? What's going on, no doubt. All right, UConn at UB, September 27th coming up this year. We don't know the Bills schedule yet, if the Bills are going to be home or away that weekend, but the UB Bulls will be home against UConn. So thanks for that reminder, Joe. Thanks a lot for joining us here today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, you got it. That is Joe Arruda. I'm glad he brought that up. I totally forgot. That's right. UB's schedule to start the year. My apologies, by the way, because I did have Pete Lembo out and we talked about it, but totally slipped my mind. UB goes to Minnesota to start the season in football this year on August 28th. Then St. Francis of PA comes here. Then they go to Kent State. They have Troy come here. Troy's been a nice program. And then UConn comes here before they get more to the meat of their MAC schedule. After that. So, yeah, it's an interesting five games to start the year, especially when you look at Minnesota, UConn, a program that's, I mean, they're getting guys drafted. Hey, UB didn't have anybody drafted, but Sean Dolak is in LA, signs with the Rams. I know a lot of you wanted him, and that was a big question about why the Bills did or didn't do anything like that. So, thanks a lot to Joe Arruda right there. We're also going to talk today to Jeff Ehrman, who covers Maryland football and basketball, and we'll talk about Caden Prather. And as I said a little while ago, I don't know if I give Caden Prather much of a chance to even make this roster, to be quite honest with you, because I think of the names in front of him, now that the Bills have signed Elijah Moore. Take a look at Elijah Moore's stats over his time in the NFL. When you think about a guy who was drafted in the second round, has played for two teams in his first 4 years, and then doesn't even sign a free agent contract until April 30th, or agree to at least, until April 30th, well after most free agency has kind of passed by. When you think about a guy like that in your head, you're thinking, yeah, this guy hasn't been much. This is just a dart throw. You might even think about a guy like Andy Isabella, who came to Buffalo and is under similar circumstances. Last year, 2 years ago, whatever it was. I do think Elijah Moore is different than that. This is a receiver that had over 100 targets each of the last 2 years, not just last year, in Cleveland. This is a receiver that for the last 2 years had 59 and 61 catches respectively, so 60 catches each year over the last 2 years, essentially. This is a receiver that has never had less than 446 yards receiving, and the last 2 years has had about 600 yards receiving each year. When I say that, the reason I bring it up is I don't think this is your typical guy that was drafted in the second round, didn't hit with his first team, traded to another team, didn't hit there, goes to free agency, doesn't sign. Yeah, he's never really been able to do anything in the NFL. He actually has been pretty productive in the NFL. So much so productive, I want to put this in context. I'm not here to tell you Elijah Moore is going to be this some great signing for the Bills. He might. He might pop. He might have a really good season. But I do think he can contribute, and I do think he has a pedigree to be better than what they've had in these types of situations in this context. Last year, the Buffalo Bills, their number two pass catcher in numbers last year, their number two pass catcher in numbers was Mac Hollins, wide receiver-wise, because they had Dalton Kincaid was number two and James Cook was number three. How many receptions did Mac Hollins have last year? 31. That's it. You went from 76 to 31. Shakir, 76. Hollins, 31. And Curtis Samuel, by the way. I should put them both. I'm sorry. They both had the same amount. Hollins and Samuel each had 31. Elijah Moore had 61 on the Browns. I mean, he basically doubled last year with the Cleveland Browns, the Bills' second receiver numbers-wise last year. That's why I think that you have to respect this from a standpoint of what he might be and be able to do and how he can fit on the Buffalo Bills. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll get to 11 o'clock. We'll learn about Caden Prather. And then at 11:30, Jonathan Peterlin's going to join us, afternoon host in Cleveland, to tell us a little bit more about Elijah Moore here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. All right, join us in the fight against cancer by riding with Bulldog and WGR's Ride for Roswell team on Saturday, June 28th. Once you join our team, you're going to receive an email to pick up your team t-shirt and water bottle at Tom's Pro Bikes on Walden Avenue in Lancaster. Not a rider? You can still support the cause by donating to our team and helping us reach our goal of $10,000 before the ride. Visit WGR550.com for more details. We got Josh, the beef jerky maker here. I'm still wondering, how did you... Like, what do you do? Like, what's the process?
I had to look it up too, but it's actually really easy. So you go out and you buy a beef roast. Like, you want a type of meat that doesn't have a lot of fat in it, or a cut mm-hmm. of meat that doesn't have a lot of fat in it, because that makes it harder to dehydrate. And then you basically just go along the whole thing and cut it into like a quarter of an inch to an eighth of an inch thick strips, because you don't want it too thick or else it'll take forever to dry out. So then I did all that. And then you make the marinade, which my marinade was pretty simple. It was just Worcestershire sauce, soy sauce, brown sugar.
You cook a lot?
Kind of. I grill more than I cook. Brown sugar, paprika, pepper, salt, stuff like that. And then you put all that together in like a plastic bag and let it sit for at least a day. I did almost 2 days just because of the time of the night I did it. I didn't want to be making beef jerky at midnight and then have to come into work the next day. Mm-hmm. So then you... The way I did it with the air fryer, I haven't done it with a smoker or anything, but the way I did it with the air fryer is you lay all the pieces out in the basket, and then you just pop it in. My recipe I followed was 210 for an hour, which in some ways that's not usually how you do it. Like with a dehydrator, you do it like a little bit of a lower temperature for a much longer time. But what I found was when I did the first batch, it only needed an hour to do it because – I did it a little bit longer on the first batch with just a few of them to test it out, and they were way overdone. So I only did an hour at 210, and I got what I got today.
So you had to leave it overnight, though, or was it more of a one-day process?
Yes. When you marinate it, it takes over a day. And that's really up to you. You can do a shorter time on the marinade. It just won't have as much flavor.
Respect to you. Too much work for me. Just so you know.
Yeah, it's okay. Well, I mean, in reality, you just put it in the fridge and let it sit for a day. You don't do anything when it's in the fridge.
I wouldn't be patient enough. I'm not doing
this. No, I was very excited. I was like, come on, I want it to be tomorrow, you know? But it was fun. I think I'm going to do it again. I might try some different ways next time. I might even invest in a dehydrator at this point.
All right.
Because
I like it.
I want to see. I want to test and see like what
you
the
never know
are
when
like.
Something comes up. And you're like, oh, that's really cool. I like this. And well, you have a passion for it and all that, right?
Yeah, and it's also like a bag of beef jerky. Like everyone sees it at the gas station. It's like $20. Like the roast itself was like $20.
Have you always been a beef jerky eater?
Yeah. Oh, I love beef jerky. Venison jerky is my favorite.
Okay.
Though.
Okay. I do too. I used to be a big sunflower seed eater too.
Me too. When I played baseball, that was all I did.
And I coached baseball. My son's teams last year, travel, house, everything. I've always been a sunflower seed eater. You can go back to, you know, when I was, you know, playing and coaching and living in Florida and all that kind of stuff. And actually, I'm sure people know, like they probably can relate and say, oh yeah, that's right. Over the last few years, I don't know if you remember it, but I would lose my voice quite a bit. I'd have a lot of voice issues, especially on Mondays after Bills games, because that can happen because I'm talking a lot. And one of the things that happened was we realized, I went and saw an ear, nose, and throat specialist. The sunflower seeds were drying out my throat.
Oh, because all the salt and all the seasonings on them.
That's correct. Huh. They were drying out my throat. That was actually one of the big contributors to me when I would lose my voice.
Really? Were you like actively eating the sunflower seeds? Like, you know, like that's...
It was a lot because I was coaching all the time.
Well, right. But like, let's say it's like the middle of the Bills season. you know, in like November. You're not coaching baseball at that. Well, you are, but you're not playing.
No, but a lot of August. August was still happening a little bit.
So it's got like over.
Yeah, over time. Just over time.
I didn't know if it was like, you know, yeah.
No, actually, you know what? I mean, every once in a while I would, like just randomly. Every once in a while, but it wasn't like as much. Anyway, the point is too that like, you know, that just, I really loved them, but I had to stop. I'm like, I can't do that anymore.
What was your go-to flavor?
The ranch was pretty good. I liked ranch.
Yeah, I like the pickle ones. The pickle ones.
Like pickles. I'm not a big pickle sunflower seed guy though.
Oh, they're really good.
I didn't really like those.
My friend had the seafood ones. Those were weird.
Oh yeah,
they were weird.
They were very weird. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. But that happened to me, and that was actually one of the things that happened in the issues. And there was more to it than that. But thankfully, knock on wood, I've done a lot of things to help out in that regard, and it's been pretty good over the last year or so. So anyway, but that was one of the things that was happening. All right, we will take a timeout here. When we come back, we're going to have a writer for Maryland Football named Jeff Ehrman join us, and he's going to talk a little bit about Caden Prather. He's a Bills 7th-round pick who is pretty intriguing. He's got size and speed. You know, he's a bigger receiver, but he actually can stretch the field a little bit. We'll get with him. We'll talk about the Bills' newest 7th-round wide receiver. We're going to talk later with Jonathan Peterlin of The Fan in Cleveland on Elijah Moore, and we'll do all of that in the next hour on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show here on WGR.